Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And Michael Bloomberg is here in my studio, so it must be a Friday. Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning. It is a Friday, and it's beautiful weather.
Absolutely so.
I was looking out the window at Trinity Church Cemetery.
Yeah, you were in my office. Isn't it gorgeous?
It is gorgeous. Yeah, it really is.
It is a wonderful spot down here. And one of the things that you didn't see because it's too early, but there is a school right across the street, and they bring the little kids, the kindergartners, and they play over in the
cemetery. You know, some people would say you don't play and you don't have picnic, and you know, young adults don't go walking hand in hand in a graveyard. But I think the people there, you know, they're looking down and thinking,
thrilled.
Absolutely. I mean, and Trinity Church is one of the most beautiful churches. I'll never forget one time, this probably 15 years ago, I gave a speech there on a Saturday morning from the pulpit, and I thought, what would my father think if he could see me? It is one of the most beautiful churches.
Michael giving a speech in the Trinity Church.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Let's see. Where should we start here? You had, breakfast with Mikhail Prokhorov, the new
tall guy, did not ask me to play for the Nets. He's an interesting guy. His English is pretty good. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult to understand, but it's getting a lot better.
Better than your Russian,
yet. That's my Russian. He's a champion. He wants to win. I mean, you can see it in his eye, and you want to say, you don't understand, it ain't that simple. And then you're not so sure that it isn't that simple. This guy is going to work very hard to make the Nets an exciting team. And I said to him and to Bruce Ratner, who was there, I said, you know, comparisons, you always want to have a comparison from something that's easy to beat. And they weren't pleased with their record, but it does make next year you can look good a little bit easier. And that, and you know, once you get the mo going, it's comparison to a lower thing, but once you get it going, people sign on and they become fans, and the players play better, and the other team gets a little more worried about you. And
did they give any indication whether or not they would change the name when they come to Brooklyn?
I read that in the paper that they were thinking about changing it. Somebody said, well, you don't call a baseball team the Bats. Why would you call a basketball team the Nets? I don't know. I'll leave that at whether they do a contest or whatever. It is controversial. You know, if you remember, a lot of these college teams had to change the names of their teams to a sort of a generic thing.
All right.
Their problem is not their name, however.
No, it is not. They have a talent problem at the moment.
I don't know if they have a talent problem.
Or maybe management.
Or maybe just, you know, it didn't work and unlucky. And the next, you know, it's sometimes these things work. And then you look at, you know, great teams like the Yankees. There's no question about great management in the office and on the field. Girardi really is a good manager, and Torrey was great before him, and great players, and yet sometimes they win 10 in a row and sometimes they lose 10 in a row. My recollection is last year when they won the World Series, if you go back to the beginning of the year, didn't they have a terrible record? And you know, why does it work? And same people, same management, same policies. It's just that sports.
Some days the deal works, and some days the deal doesn't go so well.
If it was so predictable, it wouldn't be fun.
Yeah, and anybody could do it.
Right.
All right. Back to the streets, literally. Some people sort of rolled their eyes when your new homeless director said we should have the homeless working. And isn't that the law? Isn't the law? Doesn't the law say that if you live in a shelter that you're supposed to work?
Like all of these, there are some laws that say you have to work if you are able-bodied, but a lot of the laws then give cities the ability to not change the law on their own, say, well, it won't apply to us. We have always, for example, for cash payments, or for food stamps, for example. For food stamps, if you're between, I think it's 16 and 24, something like that, and able-bodied, no kids, you have to have a job or be getting real training, not basket weaving, but real training. And when it comes to the shelter system, if you can afford to pay for your own shelter, you should. If you can afford to pay for only part of it, you should. If you can't afford, I happen to think the society should help you. We're not going to let you sleep on the streets. But I think the public that picks up the bill wants to know that everybody's doing their part to the extent they can. And we've moved a new guy over, Seth Diamond, from HRA to run the shelter system. You know, we started out, we had this ambitious goal to reduce the shelter population, and we did in the single male category. But in the families, because of the economy, I think more than anything else, things, we just got inundated with people. And also, we have improved the shelter system, so it's a lot more attractive. Now, you can say, well, that just gets more people coming in, but you should not have a shelter system where people have to sleep on benches and you're busing kids at 3 in the morning.
I don't think people actually, you know, are desirous to go to shelters.
Well,
to kind of beat the system.
I hope not. There's probably some, but, you know, the city assists families in gaining self-sufficiency. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to give people a hand up, not a hand out. Now, not everybody agrees with that. There's always the group that says, oh, no, their history was not kind, or, you know, it's there's an aggrieved party here and you should just keep paying them. I don't think that's what most Americans want to do. Americans are very generous people, but they want everybody to the extent that they can. We should be providing assistance, but...
Is the system growing? I'm talking about beds. I know that
we expand when we need it. It's actually interesting. It's easier to site a homeless shelter than a school. Everybody wants more schools, but they don't want them in their neighborhoods. Shelters, less controversial, but still controversial. What we try to do is to spread the shelters around so that they're not all in any one neighborhood, and spread them where the need is. So you want to have them near mass transit. Because if people in your shelter system want to work, they got to be able to get to work, and their kids have to be able to get to schools. So it's not easy. Our rental assistance is contingent on people being able to contribute a portion of their income towards their rent, and that rental assistance decreases over a two-year period as people get into more stable jobs and income, and their incomes increase. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help people get out of the shelter system so they don't need the shelter system, not just pay for somebody's shelter. I mean, I think as a society, we've decided we're not going to let people sleep on the streets. But we, HRA, which is our model here, last year recorded over 8,400 job placements, and we're on track to do even more this year. So what we're trying to do is get people out of depending on government and being self-sufficient.
Now, there was, I remember a year or so ago when the housing market, the real estate market kind of imploded, that the city was taking unrented apartments and letting the homeless use those.
Well, there was, you go and you get the apartments where you can get them. I think one of the things that's happening in this city is the real estate market has certainly turned around, and you are seeing...
Well, that was kind of my question. Is it going to get tighter and tighter?
You know, some problems, the better the schools are, the more people going to want to go, the more you have a crowding problem. The more people that want to shop here and drive into the city, the more your streets are crowded. These are problems of success. There is not enough housing. We're building 165,000, building and rehabbing 165,000 units of affordable housing. But the more people that want to live here, it's not enough. So this is another one of those things. If you want to make sure that you get people through the system to the extent you possibly can and get them out in jobs. And when we have to find housing for them, you got to go where the housing is. But a lot of those apartments that were vacant are now starting, there's a ways to go, but starting to fill up.
And if somebody was interested or would like to get in that housing, that 165,000 units, can they call 311?
You can call 311 and they'll tell you. Yeah.
I mean, what the process is?
Yeah, the process is a long waiting list because a lot of people want it. Now, you know, there are people that say government shouldn't be involved in subsidized housing, but I think in this city we've made the decision it is so attractive a city that the cost of housing is high, and we want to help people to the extent we can. Who are struggling and starting up the economic ladder or have been here for a long time and helped us and just can't afford anything else. You don't want to force them to leave the city. We need those people to continue to contribute to our society.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang tough. We'll just get back to you in just a second here. Let me take care of a little business. And, of course, let me remind you all that if you've got a question for Mayor Mike, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. Minutes after 8 o'clock, 800-321-0710, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. I was surprised to see that the deal at the Tavern on the Green looks as though it's blown up.
We worked as hard as we could. Josh Serafin, somebody I've worked with for a long time, came in and was a moderator or whatever you'd call it.
Arbitrator.
I think both parties had their views. I keep said to both of them, I have to be totally independent. We can provide a arbitrator. We can provide a venue. But you've got to make your own deal. The city cannot say you have to do this or you have to do that to either side. I had hoped that they would get together. We asked for proposals. The guy who runs the Boathouse, Dean Pohl, which is a non-union restaurant, was the successful bidder here. There really wasn't much competition. The Leroy's, who had run this and used to run Maxwell's Plum long before most people's time, but I lived two blocks away.
Yeah.
You know, the world's different. Different kind of restaurants work. That shtick may or may not be popular. This was certainly a popular restaurant, but they lost an enormous amount of money and fundamentally were going out of business.
But now Local 6 will not have any employees if this thing doesn't go at all.
That's the downside for them not coming, and Dean Pohl won't have a restaurant, and that's the downside
and
for him.
And the city doesn't get a restaurant.
That's why I've found something else to use that building, which will be good for the city. And down the road, for all we know, it'll be phenomenally popular. A tourist.
And your idea is what?
We're going to use it. We're going to, because we don't put much money in to fix it up. We have to stabilize the building, or it's going to fall apart. And we can make it very attractive for relatively little money, relatively quickly. It'll be a tourist center, city store. People love to buy things with NYPD, FDNY, New York City. I love the city, New York kind of stuff. We have one in the municipal building across from City Hall. Well, this will get a lot more traffic than that. And who knows? Maybe 8 months, a year from now, we'll decide it's a better use. There's 20,000 restaurants in the city. You can say, well, do we need another one? Well, we'll see. If a new operator wants to do it and the union wants to work with them and they can come together, that's great. And if not, we've got a use for this building that I think will add a lot to Central Park. And that's what we're going to do. Go ahead. And if anybody wants to operate the restaurant, you can answer the request for proposals. You're going to have to negotiate with the union, come up to something that's acceptable to both of you. But I want to make sure whatever that is, it's something that will stand the test of time. You don't want to force people to make a deal that they regret instantly, because those things never work. It's like a bad marriage from day one. You know, I mean, sometimes that marriages come apart after long periods of time, but you don't want one that comes apart the day after the wedding. And I think there was a danger here of that happening. They were both trying very hard to maybe put a square peg in a round hole. And I don't think it's better that they didn't get it done. I think it's sad that they didn't get it done. But they understood they had plenty of time. And I'd set deadlines, extended the deadline because one guy was away and one guy was on vacation, whatever. And I think they had a legitimate amount of time. And I do not think more time would have gotten it better. But, you know, the city's in a lot better shape, John, when we went out for this request for proposals. Today, our jobless rate is below the United States' jobless rate.
For the first time in a long time.
Right. I mean, you know, we talk about, yes, there's still people getting hurt, and yes, the people who've gotten hurt, and we've got to help. I'm not making light of that, but this city is doing better, and it's doing better because crime is, we're ninth year in a row for low crime. People want to go to a place, even if they don't have kids, where the school system's getting better. It is getting better. They want to go to a place where the streets are cleaner than they've ever been before, where the cultural institutions are thriving. They have record attendance. They want to go to places where you're doing the edgy kind of art stuff. You know, people criticize, oh, it was the last thing, the sculptures on the top of buildings. That disaster went away. They're still there. I mean, it was a 2 days, you know, made up story of people going to jump. Come on, spare me. People know the difference. And it's around the world. People read about that closing Times Square and Herald Square. Those are the things that get people to come to the city to spend their money as tourists or to get an education or get medical care or to start businesses here and pay taxes so we can afford our municipal workforce. And that's why the city, and you can see the results. This city has come through this recession better than anybody had predicted. And it is, we're not out of the woods by any means, nor is the rest of this country or the world. I think some really serious problems. You see that in the stock market. Europe is got some very serious problems. It's very hard to see how you can get out of that. There are some people who have real questions about the financial system and new regulations, whether that will work or whether it will drive business out of our country. But regardless, in spite of all of that stuff, New York City's jobless rate is below the U.S. rate for the first time in months. And doesn't mean we don't have a lot more to do, but it certainly should put a smile on your face and say we're going in the right direction.
Paul Volcker said, look at what's happening in Europe and then look to America, and we just don't either understand it, don't have the concern that we should.
Well, the United States' balance sheet is arguably, depending on how you want to measure it, worse than Greece's. In terms of debt as a percentage of GNP, a number of those kinds of measures. That doesn't mean that we're terribly managed, doesn't mean that we don't have a future, but depending on how you play with the numbers, we certainly have a deficit that is much greater than most economists think is tolerable. We certainly have some big problems to address. The health care bill did some things, but it didn't address the problem of a health care system that's going to cost 25% of GNP. We can't afford that. Our immigration policy is national suicide. People are creating businesses and jobs overseas because they can't get a green card to do it here. And if a whole industry moves overseas, you're not going to get that back in our lifetime. That is a real big problem. You have a lot of West Coast IT technology companies. They open offices in Vancouver because the engineers they want they can get Canadian passports. They can't get American passports. If you want to solve the lack of jobs here, you've got to have people come in from around the world and create small businesses. So there's all of these kinds of problems. Social Security is, we take your money, we pay it out. Everybody thinks they call this trust fund. That's a joke. There is no money there. It is where, and more and more, as you get more elderly, then the youth are going to have to work harder to pay those benefits for the elderly. Nobody's addressed any of these problems. You have nonpartisanship. Congress seems to be not popular is a nice way to phrase it.
Yes.
And, that you can argue that they're doing a good job or a bad job, but it is partisan. President, I think, is, I give him decent marks. I think he's struggling. He came into a terrible economy and terrible partisanship. But that's his job. He wanted the job, and I think we all got to pull behind him and help him get through this. And then, in the last year, if you want a different president, that's the time. The time for partisanship is not now. The time for partisanship is in three years at the presidential level. And
all right, well, I've got to take a break right here. We've gone 2 minutes over on the half hour. We'll get back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg in just a second. And again, let me remind you, you better get in line if you have a question. 800-321-0710. Joe Bartlett. All right, here we go. And we're filling up here our lines pretty fast. 800-321-0710, 21 before 9. Mr. Mayor, what do you think of the Senate's financial reform bill?
Look, this parts that I think absolutely we need, the consumer protection stuff and anything that gives greater visibility. I've always been a believer that the marketplace will take care of an awful lot of things if people know what's going on. So things that get you more disclosure of transactions, the terms, the prices, and whatever, that's all good stuff. Some of the other stuff, I think that you can argue you can't do modern finance without derivatives. People think, oh, derivatives must be bad. They aren't. Farmers have used derivative products. No farmer could possibly farm unless, because they've got to, when they're going to write a check for fertilizer and seed, they've got to know what they're going to sell for. So they sell things for future delivery and that sort of thing. I think, number one, the Senate's passed a bill and the House has now passed a bill, and you've got to now go to conference. So who knows what's going to come out of that? Schumer and Gillibrand, too, I think, have worked hard in the Senate to make the bill better. Is it where I would like it to be? I'm not an expert on some things yes, some things no. I think there's a little bit of unfair criticism about Schumer not being out there yelling and screaming. I think he has done an awful lot to make the bill better. But now the real question is what happens in committee, because our senators can write, influence Congress and the Senate and get the greatest bill. And if the conference committee does something different, then all their work gets thrown out. So the next step is to work. Barney Frank will be a very big part of this. Barney Frank's actually a very smart guy. I ran into him when I was in Washington a couple weeks ago, and we walked in the subway. They have a little subway between office buildings and the Senate. He'll be part, and Chuck will have a big part.
Do you think the consumer portion of this, consumer protection, a new agency, and all of that is
I can't figure out why the big battle over where that agency goes. To me, I don't. Maybe there's something I'm missing. I think you should have some consumer protection. I think the other side of that coin is you can also say, wait a second, you're not going to protect people from doing stupid things. If you educate them and they want to do something, I'll give you a good example. Smoking. Our job is to tell you that smoking kills you. If you want to go smoke, I don't happen to think that we should outlaw smoking. I think you're pretty stupid to do it. And I do think we have a responsibility to explain it to you. And the same thing here. I think you have a responsibility to tell people. Who are you to say to somebody you can't take that mortgage if somebody's willing to give it to you? I can tell you, hey, John, you know, you're not likely to be able to pay the debt service over a period of time. You're going to have some disruptions in your career, and you don't have any savings to fall back on, and this, that, and the other thing, and you're pushing too hard, and you're assuming prices will keep going up, and history shows they go up and down. Do all of that. But should we say to you, no, you can't buy it? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I couldn't agree with you more.
Then you're right. Well, that's a nice thing. That's what I like about you.
this is a touchy subject, but the water rates for the four consecutive years has gone up almost 13%. Why now has it gone up so much? Were they low for a long, long time?
My great press secretary, Stu Loza, corrected me this morning because I always have said about 80% of our projects are projects that are federally mandated or court mandated, and he points out it's only about 70%. Okay?
Well, but hey,
that's his job. That we are required by law, for example, to build a filtration plant, the one that's being built under Moshalu Golf Course in Van Cortlandt Park. And it's an enormous project. I don't know how many billions of dollars. But we get fined by the federal government every day for not filtering our water. And we've got to get this done. So we will do that. And there are other projects like that. Then there are projects like the third water tunnel, which I just, when I came into office, I said, what could close down this city? Well, we have two water tunnels. If there is a crack, tiny little earthquake, which happens around the world, and one of these were to collapse, it'd be 6 months before you could figure out where dig down that's 500 feet underground. You don't do this overnight. And in the meantime, what would you do with all those buildings? You can't live in a building that doesn't have water. We can't fight a fire. You can't bathe. You can't cook. So that's one of those things. And Kaz Holloway, who's running this thing, really is very competent. What he is, it just costs a lot to do these projects, and you have to do them. I think the public should ask, are the projects well run? Because if you got to do them,
question I think people are asking across the board for government.
Well, I can only tell you that when I look at Department of Environmental Protection, I think these projects are well run. When you have a $1 billion construction project, is there somebody goofing off? Is there somebody taking a bribe? Yes, come on, thank you very much. But generally speaking, he uses great contractors. We have a lot of oversight. And as far as I can tell, the public is getting what they're paying for. Separate question is, should you need it? And that most of that comes from the federal government, or 70% comes from the federal government, government meaning courts as well.
All right, so this is strictly math here, that the costs that are being incurred.
We don't have a hunting lodge for the commissioner of the DEP. He's not out, you know, spending a lot of money on going bowling. We are spending the money on the projects. And
you mentioned the city's in better shape, that there are signs that things are improving,
yep.
whether it be employment or whatever
yep.
it might be. Is that why there were some reprieves of firehouses? You also, a couple of weeks ago, said NYPD, would there be no cuts?
Well, the first thing is you have to protect the city, okay? Now, the biggest thing that you have to protect from is street crime. It's not that terrorism isn't real and could kill us, but day in and day out, you are much more likely to interface with street crime than terrorism. And that's most of what the police department was created to fight and most of what they do. We do have 1,000 police officers devoted to intelligence and counterterrorism. We have police officers around the world to see best practices and what the terrorists are doing and all of that sort of stuff. But the police department's fundamental job is to bring down the crime rate. And for the 9th year in a row, including this year, they're doing it. There is, whenever you see a spike in murder rate, people say, oh, my God, the world's coming to an end. The truth of the matter is the murder rate is only, I think we're 15 murders greater than last year at this point in time, and we're 5 months through the year. So essentially it is so low now that you're always going to be slightly up or slightly down, even if you maintain it. But I've committed to the public we are not going to walk away from our responsibility to fight street crime or try to prevent terrorism, and we will make sure we have the resources to do it. Keep in mind, my job is not to spend as much money as I can, not to have as many police officers as we can find. It is to do the job with the minimal resources, as little as we can get away with, because the public doesn't want to spend any more money. And you say, oh, well, I'm willing to spend money on this. Well, okay, what about that? Oh, I'm doing... Pretty soon, there's nothing you're willing to cut other than the other guy's favorite things, and the other guy wants to cut yours. When it comes to the fire department, the reason this became all of a sudden a one-day issue, there is a requirement in the law that if you close either a company, meaning an engine or a truck is one of the ladders, or you close a firehouse, you have to give 45 days notice. So somebody said, oh, well, if an on-time budget is June 30th, 45 days back is the middle of May, therefore they must be sending something out today. No. If we don't have to, we can do that next month or the month after. You have to give 45 days notice, and if we close anything, we will. We have to find ways in the fire department to spend less money, period. End of story. We just don't have enough money. And the same thing is true in education, and the same thing is true in every single one of these agencies. People say, yeah, I know you got to spend less, but when they actually hear what the details are, oh, no, not that. The trouble is that most of the city's budget goes for labor, and so you got to do more with less. In the fire department, the contract has minimum manning, so if you have fewer people, you're going to have either fewer companies or fewer firehouses, and we'll see what happens down the road. The fire department does a great job. I'm their biggest supporter, and we have taken care of our firefighters like our police officers. They've gotten what I think history shows is a very generous raise. Some people criticize me for paying them too much. I want them to be well paid and work very hard. But there's a limit to what we can do and what we can afford. So maybe we have to do a fifth-tier pension system. That would come. Getting rid of call boxes is a no-brainer. We've got to do that. Nobody uses them other than to pass in false alarms. There's almost no, when you talk to firefighters, never. It's people today use their home phone or cell phones. But we still have these boxes, and people say, oh, no, you can't take that away. If you can't take that away, I can tell you, it's going to be engine companies or firehouses or both. I would love to have a firehouse on every block. That's not the real world. I'd love to have a cop in every block. That's not the real world.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're going to go to the phones here, but I have an email that Janice sent us this week, and Janice said, I called the morning show to ask the question of the mayor, although I did not get an actual question, get able to pose the question to the mayor. You took my information and you said you would call back not long after a person from the mayor's office called. Help me with my problem. I got action. Thank you very much.
Full service mayor for $1 a year. Well, Janice, I'm glad we could help. Now we do have 8.4 million other people to make sure they get the help too. And that's, I actually had a meeting this morning on improving efficiency and making sure we have a long ways to go. And I'm determined in the third term to fix exactly those problems of being able to get services to people a lot quicker and a lot better and a lot more efficiently.
All right, we'll let you talk to a couple of those people coming up here straight ahead, 800-321-2077. All right, couple left here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg and you this time around. Mr. Mayor, we're going to start with line number two. That happens to be Joe up in Connecticut. Hello, Joe. Good morning. What's your question?
Good morning, John. Thanks for taking my call. I always listen to you as I drive. I have a question for the mayor.
Yep.
Does he have a Buy American plan for the city of New York?
We have, Joe, a legal requirement to get the best product for the best price. I'd love to see when American companies win that battle. But if it's a foreign company that has the best product for the best price, that's what we're going to buy. And we hope that everybody around the world has the same policy. Remember, New York is built by people and companies that sell overseas. And we want to make sure that we have a fair crack at their business. And you can't get a fair crack at their business unless you give them a fair crack at ours. And so, you know, it's easy to say, well, let's keep the jobs here, but we'll have more jobs here in an open market because America has what it takes to win those battles. And we're not going to win every one of them, but more than not, America can compete on the world stage. And I've always been annoyed with people that are trying to be protectionist, and all you do is you hurt American consumers and you hurt American producers. And so people say, you know, well, I don't want somebody selling Chinese-made products here. But if the public wants to buy them, you know, do you want to look the public in the eye and say, no, you can't buy something at a better price that you think is a better product, and you're going to have to, you know, only buy American? No, you don't want to do that. The consumer doesn't want that. I don't think consumers understand how many different people from our companies from around the world sell here, nor do they understand how many American jobs are dependent on selling overseas. Now, we do have a balance of payments. We import more than we export, but the future of our country is to be the dominant economic force in the world, and you do that by making the best products and selling them overseas, and you want open markets.
Protectionism has never worked.
History shows that it just doesn't work. Having said that, you know, you want to make sure American companies get out there and compete. And when you try to protect American companies, what they do is, and you saw that in the big three in Detroit, they didn't innovate, and people said, I'd rather have a car made by a Japanese company or a Korean company. And in fact, those cars are made in America, pretty much all of them anyway, so they are American companies in the sense of where the jobs are and where the tax revenues come. But the protectionism that Congress gave Detroit in the end was, I would argue, what kept Detroit from being the dominant companies in the world, because they didn't have to innovate. They didn't have to force themselves to work harder and be leaner and be tougher and run more risks in terms of new products and that sort of thing. So, you know, protectionism, whether it goes back to Smoot-Hawley or whatever, it which is an old law that tried to close our borders after the Depression, and it was a disaster.
All right, Christine out in Jamaica, good morning. Your question for the mayor.
Yes, my question is, currently city property taxes are kind of high, and some people can, you know, like make their mortgage, but they are unable to make the city property taxes. Is there any, you know, like you could put yourself on a, you know, like a mini budget or...
Yeah, we do have a program. Call 311 and they'll get you the information. But if you're behind, my recollection, Christina, is it's you can't walk away from your obligation, but we stop collecting interest on it as long as you stay current on your new payments. I mean, nobody likes taxes. Nobody likes property taxes. But we want to have firefighters and police officers and teachers and sanitation workers, correction workers, and everybody else. And that's how they get paid. And the property tax is the only tax that the city really controls. The way the property tax is set is the mayor and the city council, and really it's the city council that votes on it, they pass a law what to spend, and the difference between what the revenues are going to be and what we're going to spend is by definition what the property tax is going to be. Now, we have revenues from other kinds of taxes which are set by Albany, a lot of times at our request, raised or lowered, but property tax is done by the city, but it's pretty much automatic, and it's much too high, except that we want the services. So you can, if you're getting behind, there is a relief that can help you But you're still going to have to, in the end, pay your taxes when you sell your house or before then.
All right. We don't have time, unfortunately, for another one. But you're absolutely right about property taxes. It is the bane of everybody, whether they're New Yorkers or Long Island.
Right. Actually, our property taxes are lower than outside of the five counties. But that's the good news. The bad news, we have a sales tax and an income tax and business taxes. So it's not fair to say, really, that our property taxes are very low, even though technically they are. The total tax burden is very high, and we get a lot of services for it.
All right, Mr. Mayor. That's it. Thank you very much, as always. We will look forward to getting back together again right here in Studio 4 next Friday. That's going to do it for me, John Gambling, for everybody on the program. Have yourselves a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on Monday morning.